Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is the next in a series looking at major financial fraud, which is an area of business that absolutely fascinates me. Because fundamentally, at some point, you will get found out. There is no way in the modern world of business that you can fool all of the people all of the time. You may be able to get away with it for a period, but at some point you'll get caught and then you're likely to go to prison. And I find it astounding and fascinating that people keep doing this. And in today's episode, I want to tell you about WorldCom, which was a telecoms company that was created by a Canadian called Bernard Ebbers, who was known as the Telecom Cowboy. And he grew his company through a series of acquisitions. It became a really complicated corporate group. And as the company got bigger and the executives got more and more greedy, they decided to start burying costs into all of this complicated web of corporate acquisitions. But as with anything else, they got caught in the end. So here we go. This is the story of what was once the biggest telecom company in the world, WorldCom. In 1983, Bernard Ebbers, a Canadian from Edmonton, formed a telecommunications business called Long Distance Discount Services Inc. Ebbers, a larger-than-life figure whose trademark was cowboy boots and a 10-gallon hat, was later appointed as CEO, and the company name was changed to WorldCom. Dubbed the Telecom Cowboy, Ebbers often wore boots and blue jeans instead of a typical corporate uniform of a suit and tie. He also lived on a farm and loved to drive a tractor. Ebbers built the company into one of America's leading long-distance companies by acquiring more than 60 other telecom companies. At the peak of the dot-com bubble, its market capitalization had grown to $175 billion. By the late 1990s, WorldCom, a long-distance call and internet provider, had grown to become the largest telecommunications business in the world. However, WorldCom had grown through a series of poorly managed acquisitions and mergers into a corporation of competing divisions, redundant services and products, and multiple billing systems. It was a chaotic environment which proved to be perfect for fraud and corruption. The first form of fraud that the company embarked upon was the misclassification of costs. Due to the multiple divisions and companies within the group, it was possible to shift labour expenses from one category to another to enable WorldCom to artificially boost its bottom line and show a profit rather than a loss. In 2000, an employee called Kim Emig refused to carry out one of these accounting transfers and blew the whistle to the chief operating officer. This action brought an end to this form of fraud. However, soon afterwards, Kim Emig was fired. Although one fraudulent accounting scheme had been closed down, another soon took its place. With sales plummeting, some WorldCom executives devised another idea for cooking the books. The management team created the fabricated concept of prepaid capacity. Using this concept, the company accountants were instructed to book certain costs, such as the leases of network lines, as capital expenses instead of operating expenses. Capital expenses are designed for long-term assets, and the costs can therefore be spread out over a number of years. However, operating expenses must be recognised in full as and when they occur. This subtle change of accounting resulted in a huge reduction in the amount of costs being accounted for each year, and as a result, the company was officially able to declare a high level of profits, whilst in truth, WorldCom was careering towards bankruptcy. Cynthia Cooper, who was head of WorldCom's internal audit department, heard of Emig's allegations and decided to investigate the matter. When Cooper and her accounting team looked into the claims, they stumbled upon $1.4 billion worth of capital expense entries that had been allocated as prepaid capacity. Cooper had never heard of prepaid capacity before, and neither had any of the accountants she asked for an explanation. Furthermore, there was nothing to back up these entries, no invoices, no receipts, or supporting documentation of any kind. Following further investigation, the auditors uncovered $3.8 billion worth of operating expenses that had been transferred to capital expense accounts. When word of this investigation reached the executives who had ordered the deceitful entries, Cooper was asked to drop it, but she refused. Instead, Cooper went to the chair of WorldCom's audit committee and blew the whistle on the company's fraudulent accounting. By this point, many investors had become suspicious of Ebbers' story, especially after the Enron scandal broke in the summer of 2001. Following Cynthia Cooper's report, the Securities and Exchange Commission launched its own investigation into WorldCom's accounting and found that the company had overstated assets by a staggering $11 billion. At the time, it was the largest corporate accounting fraud in US history. The SEC charged WorldCom with civil fraud, and several executives, including Bernard Ebbers, were indicted on charges of securities fraud, conspiracy, and filing false documents with regulators. The SEC charged WorldCom with civil fraud, and a $2.25 billion settlement was reached with WorldCom. The company filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection, and in 2006, what remained of the once mighty corporation was purchased by Verizon. Bernard Ebbers was forced to stand down as chief executive in April 2002 after the scandal broke. It was discovered not long after that he had borrowed $408 million from Bank of America in 2000 to cover margin calls using his WorldCom shares as collateral. Ebbers maintained that he was unaware of the fraud and that it was all engineered by Scott Sullivan, the company's chief finance officer. At the 2002 congressional hearing, Ebbers stated, "I believe that no one will conclude that I engaged in any criminal or fraudulent conduct during my tenure at WorldCom." However, despite this statement, he pleaded the Fifth Amendment and declined to answer any questions. A federal jury found Ebbers guilty on 9 counts of securities fraud, and he was sentenced to 25 years in prison in 2005. The chief finance officer, Scott Sullivan, received a 5-year jail sentence after pleading guilty, cooperating with prosecutors and testifying against Ebbers. In December 2019, Ebbers was released from Fort Worth prison due to declining health, having served 13 years of his 25-year sentence. He died just over 1 month later. On October 11, 2002, WorldCom investors brought a civil action lawsuit against Ebbers and other defendants, alleging injuries as a result of Ebbers' securities fraud violations. Judge Denise Coates of the United States District Court for the Southern District of New York ordered the parties in the lawsuit to negotiate. The parties agreed that Ebbers and his co-defendants would distribute over $6 billion plus interest to over 830,000 individuals and institutions that had held stocks and bonds in WorldCom at the time of its collapse. Ebbers agreed to relinquish almost all his assets, including a home in Mississippi, his interests in a lumber company, a marina, a golf course, a hotel, and thousands of acres of forested real estate. After the settlement, Ebbers' second wife was left with an estimated $50,000 in known assets, and she filed for divorce on April 16, 2008, less than 2 years after he entered prison. This was not a complicated scheme in any way. WorldCom inflated its net income and cash flow by classifying expenses as investments to mask the fact that its profitability was declining. It overstated its earnings by $3.8 billion in 2001 and $797 million in the first quarter of 2002 due to its practice of capitalizing expenses. As a result, it reported a profit of $1.4 billion rather than a net loss. WorldCom filed for bankruptcy on July 21, 2002, just 1 month after its auditor, Arthur Anderson, was convicted of obstruction of justice for shredding documents relating to its audit of Enron. It was later discovered that Arthur Anderson, which had audited WorldCom's financial statements for 2001 and reviewed WorldCom's books for Q1 2002, had ignored memos from WorldCom executives informing them that the company was inflating profits by improperly accounting for expenses. The scandal resulted in a new wave of regulations and legislation designed to increase the accuracy of financial reporting for publicly traded companies. The most important of these measures was the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, which enhanced disclosure standards and the penalties for false accounting, and was introduced in July 2002 as a direct result of the wave of corporate crime at that time. This law, amongst other things, holds top executives personally liable for the accuracy of a company's financial statements. The law also requires businesses to establish a method by which their staff members can anonymously report problematic accounting practices or other questionable conduct. Other corporate accounting scandals such as Enron also contributed to the passage of this law. Despite the changes to the law and the regulations, the WorldCom scandal left a shame on the reputation of accounting companies, investment banks, and credit rating agencies that was never completely eradicated. Cynthia Cooper, together with Sharon Watkins of Enron and Colleen Rowley of the FBI, was one of three women who were honoured as one of Time magazine's Persons of the Year in 2002. Time dubbed this group of women the whistleblowers, and Cynthia Cooper remains a model of effective whistleblowing because she is someone whose leadership and adherence to ethics helped revolutionise the way American firms do business. Hopefully you found this video interesting and informative. If you've liked what I've said today, then please give me a thumbs up, don't forget to subscribe, and thanks for watching all the way through to the end.